Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Ian Tuttle of National Review, who is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And today, Ian, the good martini is actually good. Yesterday, it was a little bit of a mixed bag with the whole Ben Carson drama going on. But today, we get great news from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, or at least a three-judge panel of that appellate court. This is the Politico version of the story. A federal appeals court has rejected President Barack Obama's effort to move forward with a series of executive actions he announced last year, seeking to give quasi-legal status and work permits to millions of undocumented immigrants. The 2-1 ruling Monday from the New Orleans-based Fifth Circuit is a defeat for the Obama administration, but one that may have come just in the nick of time to give the Supreme Court the chance to revive Obama's attempt to make it easier for many immigrants who entered the U.S. illegally to live and work here. The administration, of course, strongly disagrees with it. And if history is any guide, they're just going to ignore it and keep doing it anyway while they appeal to the Supreme Court. Bob Goodlatte, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, says today's decision from the appeals court is a victory for the Constitution and the American people. Because, of course, the president said time after time after time he didn't have the power to do this. And in the majority, the court said that the states have alleged an injury, and the government predicts that the later decisions of the beneficiaries of this program would produce offsetting benefits. Weighing those costs and benefits is precisely the type of accounting exercise in which we cannot engage. Texas has shown injury. Greg Abbott filed that while he was still attorney general. So, Ian, there's obviously still at least one more court fight to go here, and this is going to turn into an even fiercer political debate, but we won at the Fifth Circuit. That's great.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's sort of an unqualified good thing. As far as I can tell, conservatives have said from the beginning, and even, you know, quietly, maybe people who are not necessarily self-identifying conservatives, but people who just care about the rule of law, have said the president's orders overstep serious lines, and the court has at least some technical legal basis for agreeing with that. So it's a good thing. Because of the timing of the Fifth Circuit opinion, like you noted, there's a chance that the Supreme Court could still take it up during this term, sort of expedite the whole process. What is to be expected there, I'm not sure. I'm sure more legal eagles will be looking at it over the next couple weeks, looking at sort of what precedents exist and how the judges vote on these sorts of questions. But for political purposes, it's terrific for Republicans, and they need to keep beating the drum on the fact that whatever you may think about the policy here, and there are, to a certain extent, disagreements within the Republican presidential field about, you know, what to do with the people who are here illegally and all the rest. Whatever you may think about that, the legal question here is simple, which is the president has no authority under the Constitution to write or rewrite the law. And the judges at these various levels of the judiciary are reaffirming that, and Republicans should do so unequivocally as well.
Just to point out the way the Politico did this story, the one judge who disagreed with the decision was quoted in paragraph 7. The White House response is in paragraph 9. The actual paragraph with the crux of the majority's decision was in paragraph 18. So interesting pyramid scheme there for the story.
Fair and balanced. Fair and balanced.
Yes, exactly. All right. On to the bad martini now. And tonight is debate. I think it's number 4 now for the Republicans. This will be on Fox Business. Only 8 candidates on stage. I'm sure we'll have plenty of reaction to that tomorrow. A lot of eyes on Jeb Bush as to whether he can invigorate his campaign a little bit tonight. And we'll see if that's going to be the case. But if the New York Times story from today is any indication, his latest strategy better not work from a conservative perspective, because it's really not going in a smart way from a conservative perspective. The cash-rich group aiding Jeb Bush White House run has filmed a provocative video casting his rival Marco Rubio as ultimately unelectable because of his hardline stand against abortion. And it goes on to say that because in the first debate, Mr. Rubio talked about how he was not in favor of abortion, even in the cases of rape and incest, that it made him too extreme to win a general election. Ian, we'll find out if that's true, if Rubio or anybody else who holds that position is the nominee. But for a candidate who is absolutely desperate to get back in the good graces of Republican primary voters. This does not seem like a very smart strategy. I guess when Jeb Bush said he wanted to lose the primary in order to win the general election, he really wasn't kidding about losing the primaries.
Okay, let's give the appropriate legal qualification here, which is that this is the Bush super PAC, and of course candidates and super PACs are not allowed to coordinate, and
right.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. This is just ridiculous. It's absurd. I mean, one of the very important things that has happened because of the Planned Parenthood videos, regardless of the actual policy and funding battles, is staunch opposition to abortion is a sine qua non among for presidential candidates in the Republican Party anymore. You just don't have any middle of the road folks when it comes to issues, the issue of abortion. It's a litmus test now, and I think that's for the better personally. I think it's closer to where the country is than where the Democratic Party is. What's so galling here is that there really is no effective difference between Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio on this question. Rubio has said that he's opposed to exceptions for rape and incest, but he's also said he'll sign any bill that comes across his desk when it comes to abortion restrictions. The simple fact is we can't get a 20-week ban through Congress. The House can pass it, but the Senate won't take it up, and this president certainly won't. If this is on an upward trajectory, a positive trajectory for pro-life advocates, we're still decades away from even grappling with these sorts of policy questions. We're years behind Europe. In a number of countries, abortions after 12 weeks are prohibited. So for Bush to somehow make this argument that Rubio is this utter extremist is nonsense. He's made it very, very clear that he has his own philosophical and religious stance on this issue, but that he would also govern within the bounds of what's practicable and do whatever is best for the pro-life movement within those parameters. Maybe this is a sop to the donors. Maybe the Bush folks really think that there is sort of a genuine middle of the road constituency among Republican voters, Republican primary voters. That is, I have no idea. It just strikes me as absurd and frankly graceless in a significant way. If this is the way that Bush is going to decline, it's going to be a very tasteless way to do it, unfortunately.
On to the crazy martini now, Ian. And yesterday, our crazy martini was on the fact that officials at Yale University apologized to students for not giving them enough safe spaces when it came to potentially offensive Halloween costumes and the practices of some fraternities who they did and did not invite to their parties, perhaps a racial bias there. Apparently, Ian, we should have given them the Profile and Courage Award for apologizing because they are nowhere near on the radar today compared to what happened at the University of Missouri yesterday, where the president, Tim Wolf, announced he was going to resign, the chancellor announcing he'll resign at the end of the year. I think he's actually getting reassigned to a different position within the school. Your editor, Rich Lowry, doing a column on this today and saying that there were a few alleged racial incidents on campus, all involving racial slurs or symbols, including one where a drunken student verbally harassed a group of black students. He has been removed from campus pending disciplinary procedures. And then he goes on to say that a reasonable person will find it difficult to identify what Tim Wolf stood accused of. The fact of the matter is that Missouri social justice warriors forced him out simply because they could. And he says the last straw was the money involved with the football team, which was threatening not to play any more games until this was resolved in some form or fashion. So there's a lot of vagueness on what exactly the outrage is here, although we do have some isolated incidents that perhaps the president could have responded to in a more forceful way. But in the end, the fact that the students actually got these two heads is just stunning.
It's utterly astonishing. We had talked about the nonsense at Yale yesterday, and I thought, here's peak nonsense for the week, but we were just getting started. There are so many things to say, and let me just sort of rattle them off quickly. First of all, you can count on one hand the number of accusations that we're talking about, and the majority of those don't have any witnesses. We're talking about things that no one can actually confirm happened. And of course, maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but there has been a string of incidents at other colleges and universities over the past year or 2 years that have turned out to be complete hoaxes. Even if several of these incidents did happen, including the one that's gotten the most attention, this drunk student, the outrage here is that drunk people are jerks sometimes. That's the takeaway. What the president did or didn't do, as Rich pointed out, and was entirely correct to do so, is unattainable. I mean, it's just, what is the president of a massive, you know, tens of thousands of student universities supposed to do? Our clue is the student activist group that has sort of spearheaded this, Concerned Students 1950, I think is the name. And they issued a set of demands, including, of course, the president's resignation. But number one demand was that in his resignation speech, he acknowledged, quote unquote, his white supremacy, or his white privilege, something like that. That's what this is. This is the social justice cabal run entirely amok, making absurd demands with no evidence. And as Rich said, taking down the biggest fish they could find simply because that would increase their stature. There's one more aspect of this that's just, it would be hilarious if it were not so depressing, and that's the media question. So the president announces yesterday morning that he's going to step aside. There are, quote, peaceful protesters in a quad on campus. Students formed a human shield around the protesters to keep media from going in to speak with them. This is the same group of students who say that they are modeling their protest after Ferguson, where they said the media needed to be allowed to do its job, and it was shameful that cops were keeping the media away from the riots, the demonstrations, etc. So it transpires through the day that the media keeps sort of pushing this line to say, we're not trying to do anything, we're just trying to talk to these people to get the story. The protesters say, we'll call the cops on you if you don't allow us to keep these, quote, safe black spaces. So what you have is, a year after Ferguson, these Ferguson sympathizers who are pro-cop and want segregated spaces. I mean, it's just absolutely extraordinary, the incoherence of this entire movement, if you want to be so crude as to call it that. It's just astonishing, and the cravenness of the president and, of course, the board, who no doubt were pushing him to resign, all of it, as you said, tied up in the question of money and the football program. It just, everything that conservatives point to as the constellation of problems in the university system is on display at Mizzou right now.
Couple of quick points. First of all, anytime there's a threat of loss of money, nobody rolls over faster than a university's board of trustees. Yeah. It's about as fast as a dog who wants his belly scratched. And then in that whole scrum with keeping the reporters out yesterday, there was even a journalism professor named Melissa Click who was asking for people to come and physically muscle student reporters and other reporters out of the way so they couldn't get anywhere close to the people who are actually leading this protest. And then over at Real Clear Politics, Ms. Click, the professor, current subjects of research include 50 Shades of Grey readers, the impact of social media and fans' relationship with Lady Gaga, masculinity and male fans, messages about class and food in reality television programming, and messages about work in children's television programs. I am not a paid endorser in any way, Ian. All I have to say is hillsdale.edu.
Well, I was going to be hard on the professor, but I didn't realize she was such an intellectual heavyweight.
So. One of those classes you want to take?
I think I'll stick with my alma mater, St. John's College, where there was no such thing as a professor of mass media, and I can assure you no one read 50 Shades of Grey.
That's the St. John's in Annapolis, not in New York.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so we got the classics well covered between our two alma maters. Check out St. John's, too. That's an excellent school. So, I hate to think of what school's going to be in the crazy martini if this pattern continues tomorrow. But as always, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Greg. Talk to you tomorrow.
Ian Tuttle of National Review, in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.